Okay, great. I will, before we proceed, I'll just ask both counsel, are you expecting anyone to join the Zoom hearing here today that you don't see on the non-video participant grid?
Not from the
Or should
appellant's
we?
point of view.
I
No.
am not.
Okay. Are you comfortable proceeding at this time then?
I am.
Sure.
Okay, we're just a few minutes early. So great, we'll get started then. The next case on our calendar today is A24-1147, State of Minnesota versus Devin Kendall Zitzloff. Please correct me if I mispronounced the appellant's name. The parties will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant's counsel will have 5 additional minutes for rebuttal. We are recording the oral argument here today, so I'll ask that you please introduce yourself and the party you represent. And you should be able to see the time in the grid screen. So with that, Mr. Mack, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. John Mack for the appellant. I'd like to concentrate on the second and the third of the Austin factors and then go into the Austin subfactors. The first argument here is that in this case, the defendant's offense was not voluntary. And what I want to point out, first of all, is that my client's probation was not revoked for having a vape pipe or other things that he did at treatment. He was, in fact, revoked for not completing treatment, and it was not voluntary. He was not discharged from treatment by the treatment authorities. He had a hearing coming up that never took place, and because he was not discharged, he was found guilty of probation for something that he was not charged with initially. I submit that if he had had a hearing, his offenses to the treatment people, like having a vape pipe, were very minor, and it's very doubtful he would have been discharged for them, but we don't know. And the
Mr.
important
Mack,
for
can I
this.
ask you did make that argument in the brief, but I didn't see that in the record. But what we have is your client's admission to the rule violations and that caught of the treatment center, Teen Challenge, and that caused his termination. So doesn't that answer the question of intention? Certainly, he in other words, he admitted the acts that were a violation of the rules that led to his discharge.
But he wasn't discharged by the discharge authority. The police came up, law enforcement came up, and took him out of the treatment authority before the treatment people had made a determination that he was either guilty of these matters or, more importantly, that they were serious enough to discharge him. So I think that
So
that.
where in the record do we find that, and how does that square with his admission, though, his statements that he was discharged for the rule violation?
Because his discharge from the rule violation did not come from the treatment people at Teen Challenge. It came rather from law enforcement in Meeker County. And that is not really a discharge. Now, as I understand it, he didn't have counsel for for this particular rule violation. So
Mr.
I.
Mack, can we, before you go on about whether or not he had counsel, can you point us to where in the record it shows that he was not just discharged by the treatment facility, but it was the county that took him from the facility, that which I think is what Judge Sleater had asked.
I think the answer is that there is no indication either way, but I think the burden is therefore on the state to show that he was discharged by the discharge authority and not simply taken from the facility by law enforcement, which in fact is true.
Okay, thank you.
Now I would like to go into the issue of the seriousness. Let's say that the seriousness was that he had a vape. And that he had another issue with the authorities at Team Challenge. How is this serious enough to prevent him from having minimal effect on the public. Let me go into the four, or three, I'm sorry, sub-factors under Austin. One, that confinement is necessary to protect the public from further criminal activity by the offender. I submit that this is just the opposite. If he does not complete treatment, then he is going to be more of a danger for DWI than if he does. The whole purpose of treatment is to prevent him from having further DWIs. If he doesn't complete treatment in a case like this, I submit that there is more of a problem rather than less of a problem. Second, that the offender is in need of correctional treatment, which can most effectively be provided if he is confined. He gets no treatment in the Meeker County Jail, whereas he gets treatment at the facility. So the point is that if the offender is in need of correctional treatment, and obviously a DWI is, he should be getting it at a place that affords treatment and not a place that doesn't afford treatment. Further, in factor three, that a further statement, a stay of the sentence would unduly deprecate the seriousness of the violation. The violation here was very minor. Even if we accept the court's theory that in a case like this, he was discharged by the teen challenge people, and he wasn't, it seems to me that further stay of the sentence does not depreciate the seriousness of the violation. Now let's talk about
the significance of the number of the violations that he had prior to this violation.
That was what I was going to go
into. In evaluating unduly depreciating the seriousness.
It has an effect on it. But I think when the court should consider this, first of all, this is not an Austin factor. It is something the court can look at, of course, but it's not an Austin factor. Secondly, the seriousness has to relate to the violation. It does not have to relate to the person. In a case like this, getting him discharged does not indicate that things are unserious. Rather, it indicates just the opposite, namely that he is being given these extra days, these extra months in confinement for something that certainly the public wouldn't consider even illegal. Let's say, for example, that a condition of probation had been that he was to abstain from vaping or he was abstain from other activities. It wasn't. So we have a two-part test here. First, we have the violation of the rules of teen challenge, not of the state of Minnesota. And second, we have the discharge from someone other than the teen challenge people. I submit that the burden is on the state here to show that he is in fact a serious violator and that there is public danger. I submit that what happened to him is exactly the opposite. Taking him out of treatment, not allowing him to go back into treatment, is going to cause him to be a more of a danger to the public than he would have been otherwise. One of the things that's a problem here is that the entire sentence was executed. Now he is out of treatment now, and he's not only out of treatment, he's out of jail. And there's nothing more that can be done for him or to him as a result of this DWI. If he has another DWI, they can't revoke probation on him because he's not on probation. The underlying crime, let us remember, is a gross misdemeanor. It's not a felony. It's not the kind of thing that there is a public danger of robbing a bank or anything. The public danger in this case is that he's going to have another DWI. And how are we keeping him from having another DWI by taking him out of treatment and not sending him back to treatment? It doesn't look like it was ever considered to send him back to treatment. And it doesn't indicate in the record that there was any contact between the state authorities and the teen challenge people for their recommendations. This would have been enormously helpful in this case, and it's not there. So the state cannot prove by clear and convincing evidence that my client should have been sent to jail. I want to touch on one further thing. I mentioned this in my reply brief. It wasn't mentioned by the state in its brief because it hadn't happened yet, but it's the issue of mootness. This case is over. My client is out of jail. He doesn't have any further probation. But I submit this case is not moot because he has it on his record. If he gets another DWI, obviously that's going to be a factor that the court is going to consider. So he still has some negative consequences, even though he's no longer under probation. Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mack. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
If it pleases the court, thank you. I don't know where to start with some of the things that Mr. Mack said. Respectfully, he wasn't at the hearing.
Could you please introduce yourself for purposes of the recording? Thank you.
My apologies. Rebecca Rue, RUE, attorney for the state.
Thank you.
Sure. I was the attorney at the hearing. There were discussions off the record, and much of the facts that Mr. Mack is referring to aren't factual at all. And the defendant was represented by an attorney. Bridget Murphy was at the hearing, and it was an admission. The state would have had testimony if it was required, where a lot of this would have been explored and part of the record, except the defendant admitted, we don't have testimony on a contested hearing when it's not contested. So now Mr. Mack wants to say that all these things happen behind the scenes, but that was considered. Everybody at that hearing, including the probation agent and the defense attorney, knew what had happened. And I'm not going to go into further details because it's not part of the record. But Mr. Mack is mistaken.
Also, given what we do have in the record, the transcript, is the testimony at pages 9 through 10 sufficient to show that the probation violation was inexcusable, which I think is what the district court found?
You're referring to pages 9 and 10 of the transcript, Your Honor?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Olson was the probation agent, and she clearly had contact with the facility and had discussed with them why he was being discharged, and it was the facility's decision that he be discharged. And in the transcript, it's clear that Mr. Zitzloff knew he was violating rules that were part of it. And this wasn't his first, second, or even third violation on this file. This was his fourth.
He testifies, I went against the rules and guidelines that were at the facility. And then when asked, did that result in your unsuccessful discharge from the program? Yes, it did. Is that sufficient to show? Well, and then he talks about the violations, using a cell phone and having a vape pipe or pen. Is that sufficient to show that it was either intentional or inexcusable?
I think it is, Your Honor. I think he knew what the rules were and he chose to violate them after he's been having issues with other facilities and given numerous chances. And in fact, probation was extended a year to give him more time to complete those conditions, and he failed to do it again.
Thank you.
The record shows he had 3 attempts at inpatient treatment and 2 attempts
at... Can you respond to the mootness question and whether or not you think this case is moot?
Certainly, Your Honor. I do think this case is moot, because he's already done with jail. And it wasn't raised in the briefs until the reply brief. But I don't agree with Mr. Mack that this violation is important to a new conviction or charge, because the conviction in this case was entered. So whether or not a sentence was executed has no bearing on future charging decisions. So I'm not sure where he thinks it would be relevant in the future. So I do think the case is moot. And
on probation in the future. Would the fact that he was not successful on probation go to, for example, whether he could get a probationary sentence in the future?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that it could be something in a like a PSI might say that he's unsuccessfully been revoked on probation or executed on probation before, but they would start the case fresh, giving him a new opportunity in this case, in his new case, if he got a new case, is the way that I've seen it handled before. I don't expect that they would change their opportunity to give him chances in a new case if he's on probation.
You don't, I mean, I guess you don't disagree that if he was arguing for some kind of departure, that it would probably hurt his arguments that he was amenable to probation. If, I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out with regard to mootness, is the implications that this might have in a future sort of amenability to probation type situation.
I guess I can't speak to cases that would be felonies. I don't see that it would be a factor. I was assuming it would be a new case in a DWI, Your Honor, and I haven't seen where they would. I mean, there's guidelines for the cases if it's enhanced. So I don't see that it would be a factor. I've been doing prosecution on DWIs for 25 years, and I've never seen it be a factor like that. I guess I can't speak to other types of cases. Okay. Just talking about Mr. Mack's statements, he keeps trying to argue that the violations themselves were minimal, but it's a cumulative effect. It's that he didn't follow the rules of a treatment facility yet again. And that's part of it. The treatment facility gets to decide what they have for their rules and whether it helps people be successful in treatment or not. And he just disregards it. The probation officer talks about how that's what he does. He tries to do end rounds and end runs around things, that he's very manipulative. So I think it's a cumulative effect on it. Just making sure I've got that. It seems the panel is extremely familiar with this case. I don't really have anything further, unless there's more questions.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Ms. Rue. Mr. Mack, any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, much of what Ms. Rue is saying is eliminated the record. It would have been terribly helpful if we'd had the testimony from, or even a statement from, the treatment facility in this case indicating that they discharged him. There's no such indication. And furthermore, with respect to the eliminated the record issue, often.
Counsel, as Ms. Rue pointed out, the Mr. Zitzloff admitted to the probation violation, and admitted that he didn't follow the rules. And so why isn't the testimony on pages 9 through 10 of the transcript sufficient to show that the violation, to support the district court's determination that the violations were inexcusable?
That's the beginning of the inquiry and not the end of the inquiry. The Austin indications also have to show the seriousness of the violation, the necessity of protecting the public in this case, and the probability
I
that.
understand that, but I thought you, well, your one of your arguments was that the district court determination that the violation was intentional or inexcusable. I thought you were challenging that.
I think I am challenging that because inexcusable.
So how is the testimony at the hearing insufficient to, or why is it not sufficient to support the district court's determination?
Because you have to show, if you're showing voluntariness, more than simply an admission that what he did was problematical. You also have to show the other factors that I indicated. I call them subfactors in Austin, and none of those subfactors have been proved. None of those subfactors were discussed. I think in this case, frankly, you have a wreck. What Miss Rue said might be true, that there was discussion with Miss Murphy and so forth, but it's not on the record. And in order to make those subfactors, and I submit those subfactors go to voluntariness, even if he admits it, indicate that the record is insufficient to indicate that my client should have been sent to jail, even if he admitted the violation. Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments here today and for your helpful briefs. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.
Thank you, Your
That
Honors.
Thank you, Your
brings
Honor.
us to the end of our calendar today. So we are now adjourned. Thank you.